dissecting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, Tickle, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Yes! What's all of it today? Cocktails!
Just a little teaser for the camel that's still to come. Nick Rogers in for Steve Tannen. Welcome to Sports Talk, the first hour on a Wednesday. Steve is on vacation. He's actually out golfing at Diamond Woods today. So he's having some good time with the sticks and, you know, playing around at that course. We played there a couple weeks ago, actually. That was a ton of fun. Good little track, as Steve likes to call the golf course up there for Diamond Woods. And I think the sun, yeah. Sun kind of cleared or came out, broke through the clouds. It was overcast. It rained yesterday. That was super weird. I didn't see that happening. I don't know if I didn't check my weather enough on my phone or missed a weather report, but I was super pumped because I got here and I was able to park under a tree, which I thought would have been good because, you know, it's July. We're in the middle of summer. It's going to be hot. You definitely want to park under a tree to get some shade, keep your car cool. You don't have to run the AC as high when you get in at the end of the day. And no, there I am getting to my car covered in leaves and pollen and thing, and it's just completely dirty and dusty and ruined because it rained on July 9th, which I don't know. A lot more people have been in Eugene longer than I have. I would have to think that that's one of the later times it's ever rained into the summer. I know technically summer only started like, a couple weeks ago or whatever. But, man, I think it was weird, man. Rain in the summertime is just, not a thing. Wow, I got absolutely denied there trying to shoot the sticky note into the trash can.
It was goaltending. It was coming down.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, maybe that's something we could review.
That's a
great transition.
Leads
me to my next topic.
Great transition.
We could get into Coach's Challenge. We've also got the Crunchies to go along with the ESPYs that are going on. For those of you yesterday that were wondering how Sam and I's All-Star Game Fantasy Draft went, for me it went very well. Joey Gallo, the pick that actually Alex was in here yesterday and absolutely roasted me on taking Joey Gallo. When did I take him? I think in like the third or I took him with my fifth pick after I had just taken Justin Verlander. There were still some good names out on the board, but I was like, you know what? I want to root for my guy, Joey Gallo. And I got to root for my guy, Joey Gallo, and he saved me from having to wear ice cream on my head. So that's fantastic. We'll be maybe Instagram living or periscoping your experience with ice cream on your head come Friday. I know somebody yesterday said that they had mini hats for us, so I don't know if those have been dropped off or not, or when that's going to happen, or maybe we just stick a bowl of ice cream on your head, one of the two. Have a little ice cream social for everybody to enjoy getting to poke fun at the intern. We also might have to check with HR to make sure that's some sort of not like violation that we're making. Yeah, okay, you're okay with it. That's fine.
I'll sign whatever. It's fine. I lost.
That's true. Yeah. See you later. But yeah, let's get to NBA replay. Challenges is becoming a thing now, and I have found my notes on that. So this news broke late yesterday, of course, via Woj bomb and a Shams bomb as well. And the NBA released a lot more information about this. This was something yesterday that I was very skeptical about, mostly because I wasn't quite sure how it would work exactly and what would be happening and how far replay would go. So and what would be reviewable, essentially, would it get rid of the 2-minute report or NBA officials being able to trigger replay reviews? All of these things were kind of up in the air. So the NBA has cleared up all of that by releasing the following press release. This is from NBA.com. Each team is entitled to one challenge in the game, regardless of whether the challenge is successful or not. So that's pretty cool. It kind of cool, not cool. Sam's telling me that the hats are here, so I think he's actually going to go run up to the front desk to grab those. So each team only gets one challenge in the game, regardless whether the challenge is successful or not. The other key factor being that a team has to have a timeout. This is generally the NFL started this with their challenge replay system that, hey, you've got to have a timeout to burn, and it's got to be not inside 2 minutes of the first half or the second half. And the NBA is still going along those lines, with the only exception being that coach's challenge cannot happen in the final 2 minutes of a game. And we'll get to some of the variations on that as well. So a team can use its challenge in the following instances: a called personal foul charged to its own team, a called out of bounds violation, a called goaltending or basket interference violation, and the biggest one of these that's going to cause the biggest amount of pain to everybody are the personal foul challenges, because you're going to have to try and figure out, was it a foul? Was it a blocked shot? Was it a charge? Was it a block? Was somebody in the restricted area? Was it a reach in? Did he get the ball? Was it not a foul? Any of these, you know, random thing, did he whack him on the arm? Was there actually contact? All of these things now are subject to review outside of the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. So that's going to be very interesting, because a coach is going to want to hold on to the challenge for as long as they can, and then be able to obviously challenge for a personal foul. You're going to hear a clip from Tim Legler coming back from the break about how big of an impact this is going to have on the NBA, especially if it's somebody's sixth foul and they would have fouled out, but a coach throws their challenge in and all of a sudden, hey, now he hasn't fouled out and it wasn't a foul. And so, you know, the other player's not shooting free throws and now the ball's going the other way, or, you know, they get to retain possession. You got to put time back on the clock. You got to check the shot clock. There's so many things that now are going to be subject to review. And I think the NBA has done a good job of implementing this in the G League and implementing it in the Summer League the past 2 years, so that they have some data to back it up to say, here's what's been successful for us in these situations. Here's what hasn't worked. And who really knows how well this is going to go? I think when you get an out-of-bounds violation, that should be pretty straightforward, although we tend to see it pretty much every year in the NCAA tournament. When one of these challenges goes through, it ends up being kind of tedious. You're splitting hairs, taking a high-definition camera and zooming in to where everything's a pixel, and you're just trying to see who the ball went off of. And you can't quite tell what it was. And you're trying, looking at the replay for a confirmation, and you're left thinking, I can't confirm anything, but I don't want to stand with the call, and I don't want to overturn the call, so I'm just going to keep watching until whatever idea I come up with some alternate angle, ends up confirming what I wanted a call to be. Again, going back to the NBA press release, in the last 2 minutes of the fourth period or last 2 minutes of overtime, a called out-of-bounds violation, a called goaltend basket interference violation will not be challengeable and will be exclusively triggered by on-court referees. So this is that final two-minute report that we've seen a whole bunch of in the past. Sam found his tiny Dodgers hat, and he's taped it to his head now. Are you ready for later in the week?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm hyped. Let's get it.
That is the tiniest hat.
This hat. It's perfect. It had to be comically small, and it is. I just need a really small tricycle to ride onto while wearing it. It'll be perfect.
Are you going to serve everybody ice cream, too?
Only if I can have that song playing in the background.
Beautiful. So NBA challenges, they're going to happen. If a team attempts to challenge an event with no remaining timeouts, the team is charged an excessive timeout, for which the penalty is a technical foul, and no challenge will take place. So this is, again, kind of something that we've seen with the NFL as well. Scoring plays automatically reviewed, turnovers automatically reviewed, and if a coach for some reason decides to throw his red flag to say, hey, review that, for some reason, the NFL thinks you're reviewing something that we want to review, that we were going to review, but because you asked to review it, we're not going to review it anymore. So, yeah, no review on that, even though it should have been reviewed and probably overturned, because any coach that's throwing out his challenge flag is going to be pretty confident in that a call is going to get overturned. The other thing that we knew yesterday is there won't be any physical flag being thrown on the court, which would be hilarious, right? Because can you imagine an official making his, like, 12th or 13th horrible call of a game, and the pressure is slowly building, and you've got the players are upset, and technicals have been handed out, and players have been warned, and a coach has gotten or a bench has gotten a technical, and finally there's just a call that's so blatantly bad that a coach picks up his little beanbag and he just hurls it at the ref. I mean, there. I the only ref I can think of right now is Ed Malloy, but I would imagine there are a ton of Scott Foster.
Scott Foster. I'd be happy to throw in
Scott Foster. Would like have to wear like a cup. He'd have to wear a cup and a mask and maybe some like shoulder guards because people would just like coaches would be throwing things at him. They would not be very happy with how his officiating is going to go.
Also, don't think that coaches don't have grudges for things. Like coaches, if I still have a grudge against Scott Foster for a call he made maybe 8 years ago, like at least seven maybe in a regular season game in December that didn't mean anything, then yeah, coaches definitely do for much bigger things. And I would love to see them have. Why not have the coach have a projectile as well as the drunk fan in the fourth row?
See, fans can't throw things.
Fans are going to do what fans are going to do, unfortunately. I just want the coach to have that same power.
That's true. Because it's easier for the NBA to then punish a coach. Because if Terry Stotts, who I think is the most even-tempered guy I can think of, he basically embodies the Pacific Northwest lifestyle of, you know, being calm, cool, collected most of the time. I'm sure there are Blazer fans that are all thinking of, you know, the top 15 moments where Terry Stotts' face was as red as the red on the Blazers logo at midcourt, which I'm sure happens. You know, I don't watch every Blazer game. Or, you know, don't watch a lot of NBA, but all of the shots that I see when Terry Stotts is on TV being interviewed or you're talking about Terry Stotts, he's basically like Joe Cool.
You're right. I'd say I watched probably at least 70 regular season games last year. I'm a pretty big Blazer guy, but like, he's a relatively mild-mannered guy. He's not,
right,
as we were mentioning earlier, like a Doc Rivers or something like that. He's pretty low-key, but I would still love to have him have a little beanbag or something like that. That'd be great.
Yeah. I mean, you could always say, oh, no, I just wanted to get your attention with it. I wanted to make sure that you saw it was happening and
just like Mike Tomlin likes to really be close to the sideline. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. He's not, I'm not trying to trip people.
Obviously not.
I'm trying to get a better view of the play, guys.
Clearly.
Really. It's so unfortunate that for the 15th time, Scott Foster has taken a beanbag challenge flag to the face. What color would you make the beanbag? Would you make it red to copy the NFL? Or would you go, because there's no other flags in the NBA, so you could do yellow, you could do a green, if it's something that's going to pop, I guess yellow maybe wouldn't work depending on the color of the court.
There's some pretty yellowish courts, I'm not sure that would work as well. You need something real.
Like plaid.
Or maybe like every team gets their specific flag.
That's fun.
So like for Portland, for example, you could have like a black and red one, maybe with like a black and red plaid look, because it is Portland.
Right. You could make it so that it's just got Blazer logos all over.
Exactly.
Just you basically turn whatever coach in their suit, their pocket square. Just whatever their pocket square. That's fantastic.
That would take a lot though, because those switch up. I can tell you those switch up. That's,
well, it's gonna be you're gonna notice a pocket pocket square being thrown out onto the court.
That's a fantastic idea. You make it the pocket square. That makes total sense.
I would do what like Charles Woodson does on ESPN, like Monday Night Football and stuff, where he wears like the ascot and the scarf. Wear an ascot and you get to whip that thing off and whip it around. You get to just throw the stanky face mean mug on.
You just pull that off. Throw it down. I say, sir.
You review that out of bounds.
Oh, yeah.
Do it now, sir.
The NBA suddenly becomes the least hip league all of a sudden.
Just everybody decides, yeah, we're going to play soccer now.
The minute that ascots got involved, everyone's like, all right, we're out.
I'd much rather have officials make squares or rectangles with their fingers than have my coach whip off an ascot and then, you know, throw it onto the ground and, you know, politely decree that something be challenged.
And you know that within the coaching community, they'd be like, ah, look at him. Look at Brad Stevens. He threw it only like 2 feet. Not a bad throw.
Can you imagine? I mean, the content of, you know, being the analyzer of, because the pregame look is important. The shots of guys walking into the arena and they've got their swag on, their bags, they're wearing a suit, they've got a t-shirt with a message on it that's, you know, supporting another team.
Russell Westbrook looks like he's holding a stop or go slow sign. It's great.
Right. You know what? He's wearing 19 different things from 18 different people and it, you know, still looks like he's not actually wearing anything useful, but for some reason he's a fashion expert. That doesn't make sense to
me. That we could go all day on
that's definitely not making sense. Right. That's definitely something that would go better in, say, like a Miami where he could be traded to, then it's going in Oklahoma City, right? I guess he does it on the road.
I don't know. I don't know. There's so much about Russell Westbrook that doesn't make sense. That's just one more thing.
So, coaches in the replay review, I think it's really, is there any reason to do this not in the fourth quarter? Like, I can't think of a situation where maybe a guy picks up a third foul in the first quarter and it was something super tacky and a coach was like, you know what, I'm going to burn a timeout here. I want that to be reviewed because I need, like Klay Thompson would get into foul trouble a bunch early in the finals, or maybe Kawhi or someone. Somebody picks up a foul that they probably shouldn't have and you get to review and look at it and see, oh yeah, that wasn't a foul. We should let play go on and we need to go back to X moment to be ready to do this and, you know, reset the play or something like that. But I don't see any reason not to save this until the fourth quarter.
You're absolutely going to see. I guarantee you the majority of them are going to be thrown in, like, with about 3 minutes left. Between 3 and 2 minutes left, they're all going to get thrown because they're not going to really be useful after 2 minutes. And, I mean, we kind of predicted that yesterday. We both kind of said after 2 minutes, 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter or whatever, they're not really going to be usable.
Right.
And we kind of, like, it's a pretty basic thing to kind of understand and kind of expect to happen, but coming up, they're going to be used a lot in the fourth quarter, a lot in those pressure moments. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's the type of thing that's used almost as an extra timeout. Because unless they have a rule where you do lose a timeout if you got one wrong, like the NFL has, which I've personally not heard that rule be implemented yet, be a part
this
of it.
This was something I was talking about while you were grabbing the mini helmet. You have to have a timeout to be able to call a challenge.
Oh, perfect.
So,
okay. That
so it is also like the NFL where you need your timeouts to do this. It can't be something like, hey, like not a mound visit in baseball. You can't just like walk out to the mound to buy some time so that your reliever can get ready. So the next time you come out to the mound, you know, then you're actually doing the pitching change. You have to have a timeout available and you have to have already not used your challenge.
What happens if you Chris Webber it?
You Chris Webber it. So if you're calling a timeout to challenge and you don't have a timeout, you get charged with a technical foul, which is the penalty for calling a timeout when you have no timeout. So they've thought this through. Again, this isn't something that, you know, they're just throwing out there because, hey, other leagues have coaches' challenges. And, you know, everybody's basically all of the major sports now, I guess, within soccer and the MLS, it's not a coach's initiated challenge. It's, you know, through the VAR official and the official on the field. But, you know, your MLB has coaches challenge, NHL, and NFL obviously did, and now the NBA does it as well. So you're, you know, all of these leagues, well, not MLB, but you can review fouls and penalties and different occurrences that are going on now. And it's just going to be really interesting to see where this goes. The NBA is also adding what they're calling a courtside administrator, hired and supervised by the league office, will be stationed at the scorer's table to facilitate and expedite communication between the NBA Replay Center and on-court referees. The courtside administrator will not have any decision-making authority with respect to officiating calls or replay determinations, which I think is interesting that they're essentially adding somebody who's going to be there to help the officials be like, hey, we're talking to, I think the league offices are in New York. We're talking to New York now. We're going to figure this out. We've gone to the replay center. Here's the call. The officials are looking over it. I'm sure there's going to be a headset involved or something like that. So the NBA adding challenges and how interesting that's going to be. I think Tim Legler's got a really great take on it coming up that I've kind of touched on as well. We'll hear in a little bit. But let's go ahead and take a break. I'm Nick Rogers. I'm in for Steve Tannen. He's on vacation the rest of the week, but that still doesn't mean you can't get involved. Hit us up on the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, 284-8571. The text line, which Steve has given me the power of for the rest of the week as well, 321-0824. Hit us up, as always, on Twitter, at 953thescore. I'm on Twitter, at Rick Nodgers. Sam's on Twitter, intern Sam, at Samuel101TS. We're going to take a break, come back with a Coors Light update and more sports talk next. 95.3 The Score.
Sometimes it gets to the point where I'm like, you can't tell. We're splitting hairs. Is that a foul or isn't it? Damn, people, make a decision. It should be 30 seconds, max of 45. And at that point, move on. Don't sit here and drag out a damn replay to the point where you can all go to the bathroom, make a run to the grocery store, grab a case of beer, come back, make dip, and then you still haven't made a damn decision.
I loved that take there from that's Ian Fitzsimmons of Freddie and Fitzsimmons on ESPN Radio. I absolutely love that take. Of just, you know, that's exactly how the fan at home feels about watching any sort of replay review, is just, for the love of God, hurry up. Just call it one way or another. Like, it's been 2 minutes now of us staring at this screen, going over frame by frame of an incident that should not be reviewed frame by frame, and we're trying to, you know, the goal of replay has been ruined from fixing the obvious error to becoming just, you know, let's stare at something until we, you know, fix, we've either defended the official or we've gone through and it's no longer about fixing the bad call. It's just, we're just going to change it to change it. And even if it's super obvious, we're going to stick with the original call because we're guessing too. We don't really know.
I mean, that's why whenever there's a replay, the smartest guess is always just say, yeah, it'll stand.
Yeah.
Because the point of the truth is, very rarely is it that obvious. Occasionally you'll get something that is like super blatant. Like as we saw yesterday watching the All-Star game, that first review in the, what was it, the top of the second?
Yeah, it was Josh Bell.
Yeah,
single.
It was very obvious. It was very clear. It's like, oh, okay, that's something you can take care of in maybe two camera angles, maybe if you need it. All right, you got it. You changed it. Great. Moving on. A lot of the time when it comes down to is a lot of people looking for a reason to change something, staring at it for 15 minutes and coming out of it saying, oh, we're just going to keep it how it was because we couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, you get one angle from one side which looks like, oh, that guy's safe. Or the NBA is going to be like, yeah, there's definitely contact with the hand and not the ball, and that's a foul. And then you're going to look at another angle where it's going to be like, oh, wait, no, he definitely got the ball, you know, before he was coming in from the side, and that's when he got the ball. Or, you know, a fingernail came across and made contact before he missed or anything like that. And just, it's so annoying. And you see it all the time with targeting in college football where, you know, a guy's going in and he's going to make a legal tackle. And it happened in the UW game here where there was two reviews. And I think were both players ejected?
The player from Washington wasn't, but Carlberg was.
That's right.
And the reason I remember that is because I remember being livid in that student section. Did I agree with the calls? I don't even remember. I just remember that the UW player stayed and Carberry got kicked out, and I was not pleased.
It was just green and yellow-colored glasses, and it was just,
oh,
you can't throw out Carlberg. He's my favorite now.
Hey, he reps Flex Friday better than just about anybody there is.
But, you know, that's the thing. I think it was Jake Browning, like, essentially ducked into a head-to-head contact because he was bracing for a hit. It was, you know, Carlberg is, you know, trying to wrap up and make a legal tackle, if I'm, you know, remembering this correctly. He's trying to wrap up and it's going to be a legal tackle. And, like, of course, like, his face mask is in front of him because that's how the equipment in football works. And he's going after him and he's going to make the tackle. So, yeah, the face mask is going to probably be one of the first things that makes contact with him. And Browning is ducking, trying to prepare for the hit. And it ends up being helmet to helmet contact. And the same thing almost happened with the UW player. And you could see where Oregon fans would be saying, look, if it happened to Carlberg, the damn near same thing just happened to Justin Herbert and whoever the UW player was with them, because he's coming around for the tackle, he's kind of ducking, he's preparing for the hit, there's a little bit of helmet-to-helmet contact, and you're reviewing it, but you've got a completely different call for some reason with the same officiating crew, with the same replay review center going on, and somehow you're ending up with almost two identical situations with two opposite calls, which makes you just think that everybody at that point is guessing, because the Pac-12 certainly isn't releasing any information as to why calls are getting overturned. You rarely see it I guess you kind of see it in the NFL where an official will come out, he'll turn on the mic and he'll say, oh, possession was made before the catch, you know, possession was gained and, you know, he cleared the goal line, it's a touchdown, or the runner's knee was down prior to the fumble. It, you know, just whatever the call is, you get an explanation from the official on this. And I'm wondering what that's going to look like in the NBA and how long they're going to say that they're going to look at a foul and how obvious it has to be. Because, again, we think it's to fix the obvious error. And to a coach in a big situation, an obvious error is going to be something that's very ticky-tacky and that's not black and white and that's very gray trying to judge.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. And I just went back and looked for the video and found it of that exact play we were talking about, the targeting call. And exactly what you said is really what I'm seeing, because what happened was that Browning, the pocket was collapsing, and so he shrugs an Oregon defender, and in doing that, he lowers his shoulders, tries to make himself smaller to evade the tackler. But the minute he does this, since Carver's coming from the weak side, he's already going in, planning to hit him around the waist or around the shoulders at least.
Right.
But when you duck down like this in that position, when you bring your head down lower to avoid one tackler and you get hit by another, that right there is a situation that, at least for the targeting call, how are you supposed to avoid that?
Yeah.
Because you can't go for a quarterback's knees. That's been said. You can't go low. You can't go high. You can't.
You're trying to make a hit angle, and Browning is changing the hit angle.
You're trying to pinpoint his hip bone, I guess, when he's completely contorting his body in a way that's going to be really difficult for anybody to say anything about. Because, yes, letter of the law says helmet to helmet. That is a penalty. But if you review this and you look at this, it's pretty clear that it was not the intention at all. And so you have to go into it as officiating crew saying, well, are we going to take that into account or no? Because obviously there are calls that I think the most blatant are like on blindside blocks where it's like, yeah, he was trying to knock the heck out of him. But on a play like this, it's clearly a guy who's just kind of go for a plain tackle. But that's the problem with review is that you can't go into it knowing these types of things. And personally, I'm always somebody who's more of a let him play it out on the field and see what happens type of person.
Right.
But it's going to be always impossible to be able to get this kind of stuff correct, just period.
Yeah, it's everything. And then you're diving when everybody's yelling about VAR and the World Cup, both for the men and the women last summer and just the one that happened with the Women's World Cup. The rule book on especially handballs, which is one of the most reviewed things I've seen for VAR, the rule book is not at all set up in these situations to be able to handle 21st century slow motion cameras. It's just not ready for it. Is the NBA rule book prepared to deal with ticky-tacky fouls being challenged and reviewed? How is that going to be handled? Is there somebody who's studying the rule book to be able to find a loophole where you can challenge something that should be a foul that wasn't called? Maybe a foul was missed. I don't think that's necessarily something that the NBA, I think they said personal fouls that were called, so you can't go back and add any fouls to anybody's name through a review. I like that you have the ability to try and get things right, but there is that ability that the time strain and the time frame that's put in and how long it takes to get it right. And are you reviewing the obvious errors, or is now everything ticky-tacky being reviewed frame by frame? So it's a lot to think about. Let us know what you think. I'm on Twitter at Rick Nodgers. You can hit us up on the text line 321-0824 and, of course, on the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline 284-8571. Going back to the Crunch Exchange, you brought up how to make cornhole more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I said to change.
Well, I mean, I think it's already exhilarating. Oh, don't get me wrong.
It's the perfect sport.
It really is. You have the perfect combination of slow arm swinging as well as pinpoint accuracy.
Limited movement,
exactly, and great team uniforms. The best.
Oh, yeah.
It's like if bowling shirts met NASCAR in a beautiful combination of awesomeness.
Actually, so this is one of the texts we got, is that cornhole on ESPN would be improved by adding one of the tracers like in golf or StatCast like baseball.
Oh, yes.
Go super analytic.
Oh, yes.
Have you watched bowling on FS1?
Have I watched bowling on FS1? If I told you that I'm doing nothing but binging earlier, do you think occasionally I'm not going to be like, well, shoot, I wonder what...
Let me take a break from Game of Thrones. I'm going to go, let's watch bowling.
Let me take a break from Netflix. I've seen The U on ESPN about 55,000 times. I don't need to see this again.
Slacking.
I don't need to see this again. What's on FS1? And if it's something that amazing, if it's something as sensational as bowling, yes, I'm going to be watching that.
So for those who haven't, you know, been like Sam and I, where you're just like, hey, let's watch bowling, because why wouldn't you?
Relive the great Wii Sports days.
Oh, Wii Sports is so good.
So good.
I miss that game. But what bowling has is they have a live tracer that goes along with the shot. So you've got your classic angle of you're staring down the lane like you're actually bowling, and you're watching the guy, bowl his. Is it a shot? What is that called? It's bowl his. You get two turns, two attempts. Wow, I've never actually, obviously I'm not watching that much bowling, or I've never thought this critically about bowling.
I only watch it on mute.
That's fair enough. Well, it's so visually beautiful, like you don't actually need sound for it.
I just watch it and play Enya in the background and just zone out.
So anyways, you're watching the guy doing his turn of bowling, and you have that classic angle of it's heading towards the gutter, it's spinning a million miles an hour, and all of a sudden it breaks in and it hits that perfect spot between the one and the two or the one and the three pin, and boom, it's a strike. Well, what FS1 has done is they've got an ideal line that this bowler should have, whether they be left or right-handed. And you can see, what the perfect throw would look like for bowling and how to get a strike in this situation with if it's their second turn and they're going for a spare. Hey, here's how they should try and hit these sets of pins to get as many bowling points as possible. And then they have a live tracer as that's being bowled. So you get to see how close the bowler's actual throw was to the ideal line that the computer is saying is the perfect line. And it's super fun because you get to see, like, holy crap, like, here's how often, how many lanes it came across. You get revolutions. You get the number of spin horizontally that it came back from. It's the most fun thing ever. It makes bowling more interesting. And then you obviously start to think, hey, that's something I can do. If I go out to, whatever bowling alley, I'm totally going to be able to spin the ball like a crazy person. And then, you're going to roll 19 gutter balls. So cornhole, being able to, change the camera angle, because you right now it's more of a split screen where you've got like a top down view of the board and then you've got a straight on view of your cornhole thrower. And I think if you changed it to that kind of back-to-back line, maybe it was a little bit above so the players aren't blocking, but if you can see how far they're, I think the boards are set up 25 feet apart, 20, 25 feet. But if you throw it in the air, you get to see how it's curving, where it's landing, how high are they throwing it? Because these are all things where I see them snap their wrist and I see that they don't throw it completely underhand like I do. Like, they're throwing spin on it, and the color commentator's always talking about always using the slick side or the grab side of the bag, which, whoa, like, obviously the $3 bags I'm buying from Walmart, like, don't have that ability. Like, they're just, it's just one material that's, I got what I got. But yeah, you throw a tracer on there, you get to see where it lands and maybe how far it's dragging. Cause I'm sure, like, we talked about the aerophysicist who wrote about how baseballs have been changing. You could totally talk about how, like, cornhole bags slide on the material of the cornhole board and how many times this guy's had a perfect throw, right through the hole. That would be so much fun. Like, you just add not so much analytics like baseball where you've got 15 stats trying to tell how a person is a perfect player, and then you end up with WAR, which is an ultimate combination of all of those stats put together, which even still, like, baseball nerds are like, it's the wrong kind of data. It doesn't account for defense. Wah, wah, wah.
Get those nerds!
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 Yes, dude! About time you played a drop! Man, you've been staring at that board for the longest time.
I've actually been reading through the glossary of bowling lingo right now on their official website.
Okay, so I've just been told you bowl a frame, not a turn.
That's true.
So you get two. See, I know you get a frame, and I know it's called a frame, but what are
the
two throws within
what I'm
a frame?
Reading, what I'm reading is called roll or throw, which is pretty simple.
Okay.
That's what I'm seeing. At least that's what I'm seeing right now on Wikipedia, which anybody who's ever written a high school paper knows is the best source you can find.
Well, it's Wikipedia, and then you use the source that
everybody says they use the sources.
Well, you have to for the bibliography at the end.
Yes, of course, you copy down the sources for the bibliography at the end. But honestly, that's a lot of reading. I'm sure there's binging that has to be done.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I haven't written a paper in like 5 years. So, this is something that I don't care about anymore. Because right now my sources are like Twitter. And, Steve doesn't ask me to name my source very often, which thank God he doesn't.
Show your work on Twitter.
I remember one of the first papers I wrote in like fifth or sixth grade, like, we just got the big family gateway computer that was super loud and boxy. And I had to write a paper, and, like, the internet was kind of a thing and parents were scared of the internet and what was on there. But I would come through.
I still am.
Well, you should always be afraid of what's on the internet. But I remember our teacher was like talking about the big bibliography and how to cite books and how to cite websites. And mine was just like google.com.
That's
the first one.
At least it didn't say like Bing or something. At least you went with like.
Oh, okay, Bing wasn't a thing.
We went with the reputable number one option.
I can't even imagine, like, growing up with two different search engines. I guess I could have done Ask Jeeves. But yeah, it was just like, you know, the things I used was like our textbook that you said we had to use in Google.com. And then the teacher was like, no, you have to tell me the sites that you went to Google and you found and you read it. And I was like, oh, what? That I can
that
see
makes
how
a lot more sense.
I can see how you would want that information. But really, like, it was Google. Like, that's just what happened. So another person said, make cornhole full contact.
Oh, hold on. Wait. How? How is it important? Because it could
well,
be great.
Okay, so you are playing in teams of two, and obviously if you haven't played cornhole, you play in teams of two, but you have your partner is diagonally across from you. So technically, the person you're playing against is right next to you. So while they're throwing, you could give them a shove, right?
Maybe it'd be one of those things where maybe you're allowed to like,
you have a certain number of hits that you can use in a game. So
but
if you've got a chance to put
have,
the game
you
away,
you wouldn't want to have like. See, it's difficult because you don't want to do something where it's like you could get like a late hit on somebody or something like that. If you're gonna hit them, I think what you would have to do is it have to be the person that you're next to. Their teammate on the other side, and they rush like it's a blitz.
No.
So they rush from the other side like it's a blitz, and they can like try to jump up or something like that.
No.
Because if it's the guy right next to you, then they can just put their hand straight out and just slap you the minute you're trying to throw it.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the goal. I don't think maybe, I mean, well, that would go into the strategy of the game is like what side of the board do you stand on? Are you ambidextrous? Are you standing on the left side of the board and you're left-handed so the guy shoving you will not hit your throwing hand? Or are you going to be right-handed and risk having your arm hit and you're trying to reach across and shove the guy?
Well, I guess it's what can you do back? Because if it's just the guy standing there like doing his slow underarm throw while the other guy's trying to reach across the board and smack him, like, that's going to be difficult. But if you're allowed to like fend off with one hand, maybe you get like a little shield or something like that while you're trying to throw, maybe then.
Yeah.
I agree contact should be involved, but we got to figure out a way to do it that's both visually interesting and can still possibly play.
Fair enough. We can work on it during the break. I'm Nick Rogers. I'm in for Steve. You can find me on Twitter by swapping the letters around at Rick Nogers, N-O-G-E-R-S. Intern Sam's on Twitter. He's running the board at Samuel101TS on Twitter. Hit us up on the text line 321-0824 or call us on the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline 284-8571. We're going to head to break. We're going to come back with the perfect idea on the perfect game of full contact cornhole next. 95-3, the score.
1-0 pitch. Oh. High fly ball to right center.
Make a play, Wick.
Back.
Make a play, Wick. Get
the wall. It is gone. Blackman, his first All-Star game hit as a home run in a 2-1 game.
That was Joe Buck and John Smoltz of MLB on Fox calling last night's 90th Midsummer Classic between the American and National League All-Stars, which the American League took home the title, which means absolutely nothing. They win, I guess they didn't win anything because they're not playing for money, but Shane Bieber got a big silver bat that he can never use because he's a pitcher. Man, silver bat though, that would look good on the mantle on above the fireplace, just
absolutely
glistening. Oh boy, that'd be fantastic. I'm Nick Rogers. I'm in for Steve for the rest of the week. He is on vacation. He actually spent today golfing. What a jerk. That was the All-Star game. I almost picked Charlie Blackman. I think I instead went with Chris Bryant, so I really could have run away with the fantasy All-Star game draft that we did. But Sam will be wearing a very tiny L.A. Dodgers baseball hat that we're going to fill with ice cream, and we're probably going to Periscope or Instagram live at the end of the week to cap off our first week of hosting the show with Steve Gone with a little ice cream party, because why not? So the one thing we're talking about going into the last break was how to make cornhole more exciting. I said we had a texter bring up Statcast, corncast of some kind, and add in just, you know, stats everywhere. We need rotations. We need launch angles. We need drag distance. We need how much, you know, perfect flyers or whatever, the chance of getting a score in this situation with certain number of bags blocking the hole. I don't know, nerds, figure it out. We had someone bring up make cornhole full contact, and they texted back saying the guy getting ready to throw has to pick up his bag off the ground, and as soon as he does, the player across from him can initiate a rush on the thrower. Contact can be initiated if the thrower has not yet released the bags. So we've got...
That's exactly what I was saying.
That is right, what you were going with. So we've got potential tackles. If for some reason you're thinking about, how do I throw this? You know, there's so many bags that are in the hole. I don't want to knock in my opponent's bag. There's somebody rushing at me, so now I have to throw it over another person, and I could get tackled. He said we could have blocks going on. We could have tackles. I think it'd be very fun.
So pretty much at this point, what I'm hearing is, football, but instead of throwing to a receiver, you throw a bag of corn on a board.
Right.
Cool. Wow. I'm down.
Yeah.
I'm down.
I mean, it could be interesting.
I'm down. Don't get me wrong.
The thing I thought of, instead of making it full contact, you make it no contacts, where if anybody has to wear glasses or contacts of any kind, they have to take them off and then just wear a blindfold. Because I would really like, this is kind of something that's been talked about. There was an Athletic article a couple weeks ago about how incredible it was that players are making all of these, you know, great home run robbing catches or diving stops and things. And it's just like, oh, wow, when you watch in slow motion, their eyes are closed right before like the big catch. Right before the throw, the no-look throw, the no-look pass, like Patrick Mahomes would do all the time. And it's just like, yeah, it's muscle memory. They talked to a catcher who, I think it was Williams Astadillo of the Twins, who plays catcher in third base and outfield, and he's the next generation of Bartolo Colon. Already looks like old Bartolo Colon with the big belly and everything. But he's just like, yeah, I can do the no-pick throw to first base because first base isn't moving. It's always going to be 90 feet away from me. I know exactly where it's going to be. If I'm trying to jump and catch a ball, I've done all the hard work as an outfielder getting to the point of finding the ball, and I've worked it out. You know, I'm getting ready to make the catch. Boom, I've made the catch, and it's there. So it's I'd like to see the cornholers and how good they can be without being able to look at the board, maybe going by sound. Maybe you have the teammate yell back if it went in or not, just so audibly they can know their score, and they're trying to keep track of math in their head, and then they're trying to think how I need to throw this, where it needs to land. It'd be a lot of fun.
I mean, that could be fun. You just have like a Marco Cornholo thing back and forth where it's like
Cornholo.
Where it's like you're just trying to go back and forth, figure out where you're supposed to be shooting at. I think the key to all of this is just put players in an uncomfortable position. And then all of a sudden, you can't just rely on that muscle memory you've been using since 1947. You have to be, you actually have to come out and like show some ability to make something happen on the move. Maybe if we do have like a rushing thing, you're allowed to do like lateral movement. So maybe we can see like a pump, maybe a little spin away to evade a tackler.
Wow.
Then
yeah.
Be able to throw something.
Maybe
you can't move backward or forward, but you can move laterally.
If there's a rusher and if you go for the pump fake and he jumps, wherever he lands, he's got to stop. He can't jump or keep rushing. Oh, there's a lot of ways you can make cornhole more interesting, man. Like super extreme cornhole.
Let's be honest, it's already a great sport, but like.
Yeah, and as Steve always says, I think he'll play with his son or his daughter or son-in-law, daughter-in-law. They've got a cornhole setup. But their rule is you have to play with a drink, which I don't know how this would work on television in regards of being on TV and being intoxicated. But yeah, it'd be nice to see how these guys play like the rest of us Joe Schmoes with a beer in our hands. It'd be perfect. I've been teasing it for all day, but we're going to come back after the break with the Crunchies, the best of 2018 and 19. It was supposed to happen before the ESPYs, but now we're going head-to-head with the ESPYs with a look back on the 2018-19 from last year's All-Star Game to this year. So it's coming up next. Stay with us. I'm Nick Rogers in for Steve Tannen here on 95.3 The Score.